can we get a written report so we can follow along?
I would say yes, Brian. I would defer that to you because Muriel is not here.
This is Brian. Certainly, if we got the report with enough lead time, we would be happy to distribute it in advance. We did not receive the report until roughly 30 minutes before the meeting, so we're happy to do that when we are in possession of it with lead time.
Thank you.
We have a hand raised in the Zoom room.
Okay.
Hello, this is Sue Peterson.
I'm calling, I'm speaking from CAN, CAN. I had a consumer call me to make a complaint actually about the receipt of services.
Okay, and the nature
they were,
of the
they were concerned about the access in terms of alternative services that could be established to receive training in regards to the announcement that they made, what was going to be opened, what would be allowable in terms of service provision, if people would be allowed to go out to the community. So one of the staff would have to be going out to the community to be doing a lot of that training themselves, which of course puts them at a high risk for COVID. So we have to think about how they can communicate with each other, whether it's through video phone service, but that wasn't accessible because the individual is deafblind. So it really would be quite nice to know what the clear backup plan is, what the strategy would be for that individual to provide those services. I believe Dave was doing that. So we do need to have a clear protocol that's listed in terms of the service delivery and the alternative approaches that we can take during COVID. If we can spotlight the interpreter.
Okay, this is Margie. Brian, I would defer this to you.
Thank you. This is Brian. I believe, Sue, that that is part of the larger conversation that we'll be having when we get to that item on the agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this is Hannah Tyler, Chair. Brian, can we move on to the new business?
Yes, Hannah.
Oh.
The next item under first item under new business is the FY21 proposal from the vendors that I circulated. Yesterday you got an update. This particular proposal reflects year two of their contract, and the contracted amounts parallel year one, and it reflects the number of clients that are available to be served. So collectively, the contracts add up to $218,771 to potentially serve 58 individuals. Of those 58 individuals, five individuals are newly identified and will be served through CAN. There were some individuals who passed away, so we added in five new ones, but we had a person pass away who was served by CAN, and then there was a person who passed away that had a separate one-person contract. So we are at 58 potential individuals, of which 32 of those individuals are at Oak Hill, 22 of those individuals are at CAN, and the remaining four are one-person contracts. I then projected the possible expenditures that we would be anticipating for the categories that I listed in the spreadsheet based upon what has been expended in FY20. So these are right now, I will call them estimates only. The only thing I did is I updated the spreadsheet because there were some bills paid already, some under Braille instruction and some under adaptive devices, those adaptive devices being two additional deafblind communicators that we purchased. So collectively, between the contracts and the estimated other expenses categories, we would be expending $244,271 out of the grant award of $265,738 if all of these dollars got expended. That would leave $21,467 potentially available to serve new clients or to spend on other things if those other things were identified. I am aware that there's one potential new client that might be added either through a separate contract or through perhaps CAN, but I don't believe that that is at a point where it's ready for discussion. But I just want to stop and take whatever questions or comments or concerns that anybody may have.
Brian, this is Susie, the interpreter. We're going to make a switch.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
This is Al. I have a question with regard to any prospective new clients. What kind of work is being done to ensure that we reach out to potential clients? And this might be at the both from BESB and from organizations like CAN. I would imagine that CAN is probably a little closer to the street, so to speak, than we are. But I'm interested to know how we would, or what's being done to ensure that people who are eligible for services are able to connect with them.
This is Brian, and thank you for that very important question. Chris Lassen, who was not able to be at the meeting today, and Margie Santos have been diligently reviewing the clients that are being served through our adult services program to be sure that we have correctly identified individuals who have deafness as well as blindness, and that is how they were able to identify these five individuals that have since been connected with CAN, as well as the sixth individual whom there's work on a proposal. So their work is to be sure that there are clients that maybe could get services but haven't in the past been made aware, and to be sure that they are aware through these outreach activities. And it's been some time since I can recall adding 5 new people to the fold for services, so I feel that their efforts are demonstrated in this updated spreadsheet.
Thanks, Brian, and I want to commend the people at CAN and others who have made those efforts. I mean, 5 clients added is certainly significant, and I look forward to the continuation of those efforts. Thank you.
This is Brian. Are there any other questions on this report?
Okay, very good. This is Hannah Tyler, the chair. We can proceed to B, reopening plan with COVID-19 updates.
Thank you. This is Brian Sigmund. So Connecticut has been moving forward with reopening sectors. We have restaurants open, hair salons open, grocery stores have remained open, pharmacies have remained open. There are social distancing requirements in place, but thankfully life is starting to resume as it had been, with adjustments, and our agency, the Department of Aging and Disability Services, is finalizing our reopen plan based upon the instructions that were provided to us. There are currently no finalized plans, although we are close to having a plan that can be shared so that everyone will be aware of the types of services that will be provided at the agency. And the agency has multiple locations across the various bureaus. Our bureau is in Windsor, but there are several other locations for other bureaus and the programs within those bureaus. So we are looking at when we would be able to allow staff to come into the building again, is an example. Right now, there are very, very few staff that are coming into the Windsor office. And those who are coming in are only working in the office part-time. Everyone is primarily teleworking, and that will continue for some point further into the future. For those who can telework, that is what we anticipate will continue. How far into the future, I truly don't have that answer today, but it will be for a period of time for certain. But we are recognizing that as employers are open, they need to hire workers. So our vocational rehabilitation program is working with community providers that are looking to fill jobs that they are aware of. So what we are utilizing is the provisions of informed choice that's in the Rehabilitation Act so that clients are fully aware of the risks associated with COVID, that clients are equipped with all of the protective items they need to have in order to be safe if they wish to go and interview for a job or work at that location, and that the employer is indeed following their required protocols, which primarily we're assessing through asking the employer, you know, what do you have in place, so that we are then comfortable with purchasing the placement service or purchasing the coaching service so that the client can indeed work in the community. I believe we are now at a point with so much of the community being reopened to have the conversation about how we can safely resume some level of community-based services through these funds so that the vendors that provide these services are able to offer at least some service as soon as practical. So with that introduction, I would like to ask if Sandy Miles could tell us how Southbury is rolling out their community inclusion services and what they have put in place so that we can all hear how they are addressing it.
Hi, Brian. I turned off my air conditioner. Is that okay? Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I've inquired because we're opening up little by little. We have been all quarantined, all of our people at STS have been quarantined since March, mid-March. And we have opened up a few areas in our day services program of the thrift shops and the farm. So these are trial pilot programs, and also the fitness center will be opening soon too. But I inquired about the BESBE program, and I was given the A-OK, and these are the conditions. The wheelchair vans will be difficult for maintaining social distancing, so trips should not have more than two individuals with a driver and support staff. So the way that that would be done would be the driver, the staff would sit on one side, and one person, one would be in the front of the van and one would be in the rear. The staff would sit to the side and then the driver. So that would be the other vans. The regular vans can have one driver, an individual in the front seat, staffed in one back seat, and an individual in the other back seat. These are seven passenger vehicles. This would be the regular individual in the front. Yes, this is a seven passenger because there's two sets of seating. No indoor trips are to be taken currently. That means no shopping, no indoor dining, movies, or et cetera. But in your case, I believe that in our case here, none of our people will tolerate wearing masks. If they are allowed to wear masks, they will be allowed to go indoors. But for now, we're not doing that yet. Drive-throughs are allowed if the items purchased are secured in a cooler until we arrive at the location where we're going to eat. No eating or drinking in the vehicles is allowed. Parks, picnic areas are acceptable if social distancing is always adhered to. I'm sorry, my phone's ringing. If you just want to wait, it'll stop in a second. Masks are encouraged, but if some of our people cannot cooperate with mask usage, they must stay 6 feet feet away from everyone else outside. Staff must always wear the mask, and the trips have to be, our trips have to be approved a week ahead of time by both program supervisors and the unit directors. So those are our startup plans.
This is Brian. Thank you, Sandy. I don't want folks to be aware that we have requested clear masks from a vendor that has been identified as a producer of these masks, and we are just awaiting their arrival. It is our plan to make these clear masks available to the clients served through this grant in sufficient quantities that they can utilize them for multiple trips into the community. If there are community providers who have SSPs who do not have access to masks, particularly the clear masks, once we receive them, we could make some quantity of these masks available to facilitate communication between the support service provider and the individual. Unfortunately, I don't have a date by which these masks will be received, but they have been requested. And I am told we will be receiving them at some point. So for the moment, the masks would need to be something that either the vendor makes available or the client makes available. But I believe that almost all of the community-based activities that have been traditionally provided to clients served through this grant are activities that require the wearing of a mask. But at this point, what I would like to at least do is open up for discussion and have some brainstorming, including from some of our members on this board who are deafblind, as to what the recommendations would be so that we can resume with safety first some level of community inclusion. Thank you.
Brian, this is Sandy again. One thing I omitted is that before and after, we have to sterilize the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Disinfect
you.
We have a hand raised in the Zoom room as well.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Lisa here. Lisa Flannery. And I wanted to say thank you, Brian, for your report. There are two things I'd like to bring to our attention. The first is a question. When we discussed the idea of social distancing and everyone staying 6 feet away, maybe you forget that when it comes to our deafblind consumers, we need their SSP to be closer than 6 feet to them because it requires physical contact. There needs to be hand touching, there needs to be tactile signing and communication styles such as that. So if the SSP and the deafblind consumer together and they know the safety requirements, the clear mask, the gloves, they're going to violate the 6 feet rule, if you will, because they need to be closer. And then the second thing I'd like to bring up is, as far as it comes to the Braille training that you have for our deafblind consumers, when will that reopen? Thank you.
This is Brian. Thank you, Lisa. The Braille instruction currently is being offered remotely, and the contractor who, there are two contractors for the deafblind community inclusion, and one of those two contractors has been sending lesson plans electronically and then communicating back and forth with that individual. In our children's services program, Braille instruction is being provided using platforms such as Zoom so that the instructor can observe the person performing the Braille, doing the lesson, and then provide feedback. So we do have a model for Braille instruction that, while it's not in person, has allowed for some Braille instruction to continue fairly uninterrupted. For those who are looking for Braille instruction but have not been receiving it, I would ask that you work with Margie to help coordinate getting that in place with whatever technology is needed so that we can ensure that Braille instruction continues. We are permitted to purchase adaptive technology if that is what is needed to make the Braille instruction occur virtually. And in our children's services program, our teachers have found that that model does indeed work and can be delivered. So again, if we needed to have any additional technologies or interpreters or other accommodations to make that functional for a person who's deaf and blind, we would want to at least start those discussions with the individual and the vendor who's providing the training so that that could resume. In regards to the social distancing,
Brian, this is Sandy. I'm sorry to interrupt. May I make a comment about the social distancing between the...
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. At STS, of course, we have to put hands on and we have to be close to the people that we serve. We have put into place screenings every single day of temperature taking of the staff, and also they have to fill out a form that shows it's a tracing form, so that anybody that they come in contact with less than 6 feet without a mask, or they always have to wear a mask, but less than 6 feet for a 15-minute period, they have to mark who they worked with, so that there could be a tracing. And this is done daily with every single staff person. And they are required to wear masks always.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is Hannah Tyler, Chair. I think that's fabulous. I was going to mention, you know, if there's testing on a daily basis. Very good, Candy.
And screening as well. They screen the questions about you know, the symptoms, the vomiting, the diarrhea, the fever, the chills, those are all screened every single day, and there's a paper trail for everyone, every day. A lot of paper, a lot of trees, unfortunately, but...
Yeah.
This is Lisa here. I also have a comment. And also, can we pause for an interpreter switch, please?
Yes.
And please spotlight Lisa. Please spotlight Lisa for her comment. So this is Lisa Flannery speaking here. Again, thank you, Brian. So watching this conversation, I don't know, maybe you forget, I have to say something. You're all sighted, and so I have to remind you that for deafblind people, they're not able to really read the Zoom video, so to speak, and they don't necessarily have the technology necessary, whether that's a computer or a laptop. They don't have this equipment. They don't have these devices at home. It's all very bare bones, nor the experience. And so maybe you think that it's okay to have Braille instruction to be done remotely, but the thing about deafblind individuals, if they have sight issues that don't allow them to see Zoom, then how will they access the instruction? So that's a question I need to pose. And then in regards to the social distancing, I hear your points about wearing a mask and having gloves and staying safe. But is a policy that we can't have what we have for the SSP and deafblind individuals for the Braille instruction? Why couldn't we have the Braille teacher follow the same kind of protocols that we ask of the SSP? Thank you.
This is Brian.
Can you spotlight the interpreter?
Okay, I'll wait. Let me know.
We are waiting on the interpreter spotlight, and we have it now. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. This is Brian. I appreciate the feedback. In regards to the technology, we are very willing to explore what technologies might make virtual trainings possible. We recognize that not everybody has in their possession the technology they may need in order to participate in a virtual training. And not necessarily just Braille training, but any number of training opportunities. But we are very willing to explore if there are technologies available that would make it possible for someone who is deafblind to still be able to access training. And I would recommend that that conversation or that exchange, be it by email or through an interpreter or other approach, begin by having that with Margie Santos so that she can begin exploring what those resources would need to be. I cannot promise that there is a technology solution for every scenario, but I can promise that we are willing to explore whether there is a solution. We are willing to purchase rehab technology services to help us identify if there is equipment that could solve an issue. And if we need to make a purchase of equipment in order for the individual to participate, as we've identified, these funds can be used to purchase that equipment. So we are trying to solve these issues as they come up, recognizing that there are very unique circumstances, as you indicate, Lisa. Somebody who is deafblind, person A, may have some functional vision, but no functional hearing, while person B, it could be the exact opposite. So, unfortunately, I don't have, like, one solution that would fit everybody's situation. but we are willing to look at each one uniquely and come up with a solution. What I'm asking the committee to do now at this meeting, and we still have an hour left, because we did make these meetings go to 12:30, so we have time, is I'm looking for the committee's recommendations. You are an advisory committee, so I'm asking you to advise us at BESB how we can go about resuming some level of community inclusion services as safely as possible. So if you feel that close contact is necessary in order for some of these services to resume, what would your proposal be? What would you advise us would need to be in place in order for us to then say to the vendors, this is what you need to have in place to provide those types of services?
This is Lisa here. I have a comment. So Lisa Flannery speaking. Thank you, Brian. And thank you for this explanation. I appreciate that. I do want to remind you that when we're looking to set up advisory committees, I would ask that we invite deafblind individuals to be on the board or on the committee. We need those perspectives. Sometimes when we move forward to make some decisions, we find that we have made mistakes in our decisions because we haven't had the deafblind perspective to give us feedback and to give us guidance on how to make better decisions for more people. If we don't bring them on, then that could lead to more confusion or mistakes, and so I just want to put that in everyone's mind moving forward. Thank you. And then Jesse has his hand raised as well, or we could put it on the interpreter. Jesse's hand is still raised. Let's spotlight Jesse. Hi, everyone. This is Jesse here. And I represent American School for the Deaf. And what I'd like to do is share some information with all of you. So we have recently started the summer school program. It's a 3-week-long program. And we do have one deafblind student enrolled in the summer school. And we have seen that the deafblind student does better when instruction is provided in person versus online via Zoom. The deafblind student can hear a little bit, but is not able to see much. And so about 2 weeks ago or so, we were able to provide one-on-one instruction for that deafblind student. And we also, I met with him rather in person and asked how it was going for him. We do have an IEP for this student, and we recognize that we have to follow the IEP, but the student expressed to us that he prefers having tactile guidance and SSP versus being fully independent. And so I've spoken to the school nurse to figure out what we can do and how we can resolve this. Mind you, the student's teacher is deaf as well, so then we need to think about how we can handle direct communication between the deaf teacher and the deafblind student, and so that there's no intermediary brought in. We're still working on this, but I was able to discuss with Lighthouse in Washington State, which focuses on deafblind individuals, and they've got about 12 deafblind employees that work for them. And so I wanted to get some insight from the way they handle COVID and what they've done. I've found out that they do use masks. They don't require gloves, because sometimes when you use gloves, it interferes with the ability to communicate. And so that if the two people communicating have found that gloves interfere, then they remove their gloves, knowing that it's required for them to do a lot of hand washing frequently. So that definitely when their conversation is over, they must hand wash. And so I've brought this learning and this insight into ASD, and so we're still trying to figure out what to do with that. It's something we're working on. And I'd also like to add that because of summer school, what we are doing is a 50-50% setup. That means we have 2 days of instruction on Zoom and 3 days of instruction in person. And what we see is when we have the 50% Zoom days, so to speak, a lot of the students don't attend. We have a low attendance rate because they're not able to access Zoom themselves, they need help, and they need to be in person. And so a lot of these deafblind students need to have somebody with them, like an SSP, and in-person instruction. I agree that it is necessary that all of our students wear masks, regardless. And I'm finished, so please spotlight the interpreter. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Brian. I appreciate the feedback, and I will just respond that we do have 3 members of this advisory board who are deaf and blind, and we look towards all of our advisory board members to help us in solving some of these challenges, and if we can't solve them, to at least get closer to a solution so that we can find what other resources we may need to turn to. So when we provide, for instance, a seat on this advisory board for the Deafblind Association of Connecticut, it's my hope that the recommendations of the Deafblind Association of Connecticut have a voice through their member who's on this committee so that we hear what the recommendations are. I feel personally that we are now at a point where we need to proceed with a list of recommendations on what individuals who are deafblind are looking to have in place so that they can safely go into the communities to resume the services that are funded through this appropriation. I'll summarize some of the things I have heard just so that it will hopefully help us have some additional discussion on whether the advisory members feel that's a good decision to pursue or not so good to pursue. But here's what I have heard so far. I have heard that going into a vehicle is a possibility as long as the driver of the vehicle and the passenger have some social distancing during that travel. I have heard that wearing a mask is necessary when in the vehicle. I have heard that before any two individuals get together, the staff person has to have their temperature taken and they have to attest to being symptom free before they come in contact with the client. I have heard that where there is the need for close contact, where gloves cannot be worn, such as tactile signing as an example, that strenuous hand washing immediately after that encounter concludes is done. Those are some of the protocols I believe I have heard so far. Have I missed any other protocols that somebody may have stated, but I neglected to recap it?
This is Susan here. I'd like to say something.
Oh, okay.
This is Susan here. I'm waiting for the spotlight. So hi, this is Sue speaking. I wanted to make sure I need to find board members have the chance to speak, but I also would like to explain what's happening here for CAN. So with our support service providers, our SSPs, we have them required to wear masks, to also have their car sanitized or their vehicle sanitized, and also does the deaf blind individuals sit further back in their vehicle. Some of them are communicating with tactile sign without gloves because they have a latex allergy. And some of our SSPs don't feel comfortable using gloves. So we have a lot of hand sanitizer. That's something that we're using, similar to what Sandy said. So we are doing the same things, except we are not checking temperature as much, because we are deciding to enact trust in each other. And I have seen that a lot of the medical appointments have been canceled or rescheduled, postponed. And with these changes, we understand that there are reasons behind them, such as some of the doctors are accepting deaf-blind patients to visit, understanding that their SSP has to attend the appointment with them, but can't sit in the waiting room while the deaf-blind patient is seeing the doctor, meaning that they can't be separated in the building, and rather that if they're going to be separated, meaning they're not attending the deaf-blind patient's appointment, the SSP has to sit in their vehicle and wait for a text from the deaf-blind patient that they are ready to be assisted in departing the office. So when we have anyone out in the field, we ask that our SSPs wear a badge. And some are struggling with getting access to the vendors about that issue, but we have found some workarounds where the SSPs are allowed to guide the deafblind consumers and also work with interpreters to have the interpreters there in the doctor's office, as an example. Some of the hospitals are not accepting the SSPs to go with the deafblind patient, but thanks to the DRC, we are able to get interpreters in the room because we are able to have some provision for interpreters to be provided at appointments for deafblind and deaf patients during COVID. In those instances, the SSPs remove themselves from the situation. They do not interpret because that's where the interpreter steps in. And what we've seen with our services since March are these practices. But since June 1st, where the governor has increased the number of people that are allowed to be in one space, observing social distancing, of course, we've seen that more calls have come in from deafblind consumers. Some of these deafblind consumers want their SSPs to go shopping for them and bring groceries to their house. Some other requests from deafblind consumers is in regards to their family members, wanting their family members to be able to help them out. So the staff here at CAN are always here 24/7, happy to serve. And even if we find ourselves that we're supposed to be on vacation or that we're home during the weekend, regardless, our consumers have a right to contact us at any time. And that's some of the practices that we've set. We're doing our best. And of course, we want to follow Governor Lamont's rules and what he's enacted. And so I am happy that that you're telling us that there are some deafblind members on the board that are able to give their insights. So that's something that I'm glad to find out. And please spotlight the interpreter. Thank you.
This is Hannah Pilot. I just want to say thank you, Sue. I noticed that sometimes you mentioned the SSPs couldn't go. Whenever I go to a doctor's appointment, I tell them my husband has to come with me. It's just because he is a better hearing than I am. And I also noticed there are masks that have the mouth open, it's clear, because I really read lips and that helps. Those masks are so difficult for me to hear. I depend on reading lips. So if the individuals are visually dependent, if they can get masks where you can see the lip reading, that would benefit as well.
This is Brian Sigmund. Thank you all for your comments. Where I would like to see this conversation, at least for today, conclude is with the thought that perhaps I pull some of these ideas together outside of the minutes and create a document as a draft that I could send to the members of the advisory board to review, to comment, and to propose revisions to, so that we could get closer to a draft set of proposed protocols. I recognize, just based on some of the feedback and what Sue Pedersen just reported, there certainly are going to be circumstances where either the SSP, perhaps an interpreter, or perhaps the recipient of services will say, no, I am not comfortable with that approach, so I'm choosing not to participate. And I think that in the end, client-informed choice is essential. But because so much of the interaction is a two-person interaction, we certainly have to also recognize that whatever proposed protocols there are could never require a person who is not comfortable with close contact to be mandated to close contact. So at best, while social distancing is still a requirement, if we were to identify a circumstance under which social distancing was not a possibility to deliver a particular service, I don't see that we could ever say, for instance, to Sue Pedersen, your SSP must, because we can't require people to do that which they're not comfortable doing. So even if we say we will allow, for instance, Braille instruction in the home with all of these things in place, whatever they are, if the Braille instructor says, that's fine, I'm not comfortable doing that, therefore I'm not going to do that, I don't have any way to say, oh, yes, you will. I think we need to recognize that we can come up with some proposed protocols, but the end result would still be the two, or in some cases three, individuals all consenting in some format to that activity under those conditions before it occurred.